recorded live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes. This is, of course, a free podcast for electronic discovery where we try to offer the type of national content that appears at conferences around the country with national speakers at a price everyone can afford free and at a time when the topic might mean something to you. And today I'm real pleased with this show. We're doing a show on search and retrieval with Jason Barron. And Jason has served as the National Archives Director of Litigation since May of 2000. And in this position, he's responsible for overseeing all litigation-related activities confronting the National Archives, including complex federal court litigation involving access to federal presidential records in the National Archives custody. He also serves as NARA's representative to the Sedona Conference, as many of the past speakers have been. He's Jason is very involved with Sedona. He's a member of the steering committee for Working Group 1 on electronic document retention and production. He serves as the editor-in-chief of the Sedona Conference Best Practices Commentary on the Use of Search and Information Retrieval and e-discovery. He's also the founding coordinator of the TREC, T-R-E-C, Legal Track, which is an international research project organized with the National Institute of Standards and Technology to evaluate search protocols used in e-discovery. And if you Google Jason on search and retrieval, you'd see he's everywhere on the internet at this point, but I'd like to add one caveat. He's only expressing his opinions here, personal opinions on search and retrieval, and he is not endorsing any product. Does that sound good, Jason?
Yes. Thanks, Carl, and thanks for having me on the show.
Yes. Well, I always like to start off generally. Tell me how you got started in electronic discovery.
Well, I have, for some reason, even though I'm from New England, I had Potomac fever and I wanted to work in Washington. I got my wish. For the last 28 years, I've worked in the federal government. Part of that time was at HHS, at OMB, 12 years at the Justice Department as a trial lawyer and senior counsel in the civil division, and then migrating to my present job that I've held for the last 9 years as director of litigation at the National Archives. So I'm a lifer in government. Part of that time, while at the Justice Department, I spent 7 years of my career on one case involving Ollie North's Prof's Notes, his White House email at the National Security Council. It's known as Armstrong versus Executive Office of the President. Spent 7 years and 10,000 hours on that case, and it was the first case, really a landmark case for the government, that where email and backup tapes were at issue in terms of long-term preservation. So that was back in the early 1990s. It carried through, and then in my present job, I was hit with this wave of litigation involving tobacco, and that produced a whole set of questions, which we'll get into here. So it seems that email has followed me, during the course of my career, it seemed a natural segue to ask questions of Sedona and be involved in activities that involved electronic records, since it was so much part of my practice.
Yeah, it's amazing when you spend a lot of time on a case, it's like dog years almost. Like I had a 4,000-hour case in my life as an attorney, and I remember saying the first 3,000 hours were interesting. But
yes.
Okay, well, let's talk about search and retrieval issues. Most everyone uses keywords to identify buckets of data they might preserve or produce in a case. From your perspective, does this work well?
Well, yes and no. It it definitely is the baseline for all of us of a certain age. We grew up in a kind of automated environment with Lexis and Westlaw, practicing law in the last couple decades. We applied that skill of putting in keywords to sort of early analysis in terms of e-discovery, and it is still to this day the de facto a baseline standard for how lawyers think about search and retrieval. They get a case. They're usually a senior lawyer hands a junior lawyer a case, or there's a team, but assigned to some people to dream up interrogatories, discovery requests, requests to produce, and along with that, when you're on the receiving end of those, you're expected to come up with strategies for search. And the predominant paradigm is to put in keywords and see what you get. The problem is, as I found out at various points in my career, is that you put in just a few keywords to a very large database of ESI, of electronically stored information, and you get a tremendous number of hits that are really false positives, that are noise. And so the central question that's animated me for the last half decade is whether there are more efficient ways to go about searching than just putting in a few keywords. We see keyword development in case law. It's very interesting, Carl, that prior to the federal rules changes in December 2006, there were some a few scattered cases where sort of courts tentatively reached out and asked whether there were one side or the other had some keywords, and there was some limited negotiation. Post December 2006, you have a veritable cottage industry here of cases where courts are seriously engaged in questioning the amount of time and effort and sophistication of the keywords that are being entered into. And beyond that, some judges out there have suggested that there are alternative ways beyond just putting in a few keywords to for lawyers to think about retrieving evidence out of large data sets. So we can get into that.
Yeah, well, let's dig a little deeper in some of your experiences with keywords as a basis for identifying potentially relevant evidence produced. That can have some serious cost implications for discovery, and I've seen in past presentations you used a chart describing a case you were involved in called U.S. versus Philip Morris, where Philip Morris requested, I think, 1,700-some-odd requests to produce on 30 federal agencies for tobacco-related topics, and there were over 32 million Clinton-era emails the government had the burden to search, and it was a real interesting analysis you did when you applied it out to other people's potential litigation, if you wanted to share some of what you discovered.
Right. Well, it is my lot in life to worry about White House email, since the National Archives gets all the White House's email every 4 or 8 years. And part of what we got 20 million presidential emails and another 12 million federal emails from the Clinton administration White House, the Executive Office of the President. The Philip Morris case is a RICO action, which required those 1,726 requests to produce to 30 federal agencies required the government to, they were propounded by Philip Morris, they required the government to search 50 years of records, paper and electronic, to come up with tobacco-related documents. The task for myself was not only to search presidential libraries, going back to Eisenhower, but also to search against 20 million presidential emails from the Clinton era. We did that with a set of keywords, the kind of keywords that anybody listening to this broadcast would think: tobacco, smoking, tar, nicotine, and a set of others. It turned out, however, that there were about 200,000 hits that we got against the 20 million emails, and we had to use a team of 25 lawyers and archivists going email by email, attachment by attachment, for 6 months to parse out what is relevant and what is not, and then ultimately to produce a privilege log of about 20,000 entries. That task doesn't scale. As I have spoken about and written about with George Paul in a law review in the Richmond Journal called Information Inflation, Can the Legal System Adapt? The effort doesn't scale in this way. You certainly can't have the time to, if you're going up to much more than 20 million objects, if you're at a level where you're dealing with tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and we're going to get a billion emails at some point at the National Archives. If you look at the figure, 200,000 hits from 20 million is 1%. That 1% figure, if you're up at a billion objects, is 10 million, and there just isn't time to even do a manual search of 1% of what you've got left after an automated search using keywords. And so it's obvious that we're at a tipping point in the profession. Those of us who are practicing in cases that have millions and tens of millions of electronic objects know that we're going to have to figure out strategies for reducing the volume of ESI on the front end by a lot of techniques that aren't presently used, and then using something beyond keywords to really try to get the data set down to what are the relevant and highly relevant documents that are most useful in litigation. So it is that experience of coming out of the Philip Moore case that I started asking questions. I went naturally to the Sedona Conference. It's a leading legal think tank, and you've had a number of people on your show from Sedona Conference, including Richard Brayman and others.
Mm-hmm.
Went to them, posed questions, and of course, if one volunteers in life, you get tagged as it. So I, Richard asked me to think about putting out a commentary and leading an effort in that direction on search and retrieval. We did that. We pointed out the conditions where keyword searching is powerful, but that there are also limitations. And we, for the first time in the profession, set out in that document, the search commentary that Sedona issued in 2007, a set of alternatives to just throwing a few words at a large data set, talking about Boolean operators and having negotiations over Boolean strings where you're utilizing the power of a Boolean string for ands and ors and and nots. But
mm-hmm.
beyond that, using fuzzy terms, using alternative search techniques, which loosely can be talked about as concept searching, statistical methods, language methods, the kind of search techniques that I would say that many of the vendors, many of the legal service providers that are out there, when they go to a legal tech show, they know that they have that sort of bundle of techniques as part of their technology. But lawyers generally are not well versed in asking the question of what are useful tools out there to search against large data sets. And so I think the Sedona Conference has put out a commentary that recognizes that there are alternatives to keyword searching. And I think both the bench and the bar are more cognizant now as we do this broadcast today than they were a few years ago that there are a range of techniques out there. We know that Judge Grimm in Victor Stanley set out a recitation of alternatives to keyword searching and criticized the lawyers involved in that case for not really explaining their keyword search analysis. And similarly, you see that in other cases where judges are familiar now with a range of techniques and are suggesting to the profession that they should at least ask some questions of themselves when they're going into any relatively complex litigation about how they're going to search for evidence and how they're going to document the process.
Well, you're making me feel real good, Jason, that I'm focusing on legal analytics professionally now. Let's talk about my previous life. The sort of things you're going to talk about now used to make me cringe when I owned a legal staffing company with a couple hundred people out on projects. You know, you've cited a number of studies on search and retrieval problems with accuracy and costs, and the first one that you know I'd like you to at least talk about a little bit is the Blair and Marin study from 1985. what did this study reveal?
This is interesting because there's just not a whole lot of studies out there that are testing concepts of accuracy in a legal domain. The Blair and Marin study was in 1985 by David Blair and Emmy Marin. The case involved a San Francisco Bay Area rapid transit, a BART accident, in which a computerized BART train failed to stop at the end of the line. And the case, as it was litigated, had about 40,000 documents totaling about 350,000 pages in a discovery database. What the researchers did is that they asked the attorneys to estimate how well they had done, and they estimated they had found about 75% of relevant documents during the course of the litigation. But the research project revealed that using all sorts of different keywords against what was then this IBM STAIRS database, the number of relevant documents was only around 20%. And so there was a tremendous gap between the perception of lawyers and what the research found. That study really has not been replicated for 20 years until the work that I'm now going to talk about with you in Trek Legal Track. And so we have a situation where it's really a kind of a gap in research, which I saw and wanted to do something about.
You know what? You can talk about Trek now, but I wanted to add my own two cents on this. I used to go after I sold my staffing company, I'd go to national conferences and try to talk about the staffing side and, you know, the costs and doing it more efficiently and what you're getting, and found I could never get on the earlier than 4 p.m. on the last day of the conference sort
yes.
of slate of speakers, and everyone had already left. But this is, you know, obviously where most of the cost is, you know, the review. So, you know, let's update the studies that you've been instrumental in. tell me what you've been finding with Trek.
Well, the the Trek Legal Track is sort of an update on Blair and Maron for the age of e-discovery. And what I noticed was when I was asking my question of, are there better methods out there, I went, and because I'm a federal employee, I went naturally to NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I realized that they have been running this text retrieval conference for 15 years, but they never invited lawyers to the party. And so my colleague Doug Ord, Doug and I co-teach at Maryland, we went and we approached NIST with a proposal to do a legal track, to basically run a text retrieval project through a legal domain, a kind of a simulated universe of legal discovery. So the Trek Legal Track for the last 3 years, and now we're in our fourth year here, what we have done is we've come up with a virtual universe of hypothetical complaints on a variety of subjects, whether it's products liability or shareholder actions or whatever, wrongful death. We've come up with 80 or more requests to produce that are just hypotheticals based on those complaints. I've had my Sedona colleagues negotiate with each other to come up with a consensus Boolean string. So one side would propose one set of terms for how to go about searching against a topic. The other side would come up with a rejoinder. They'd come up with a consensus, and that would be the baseline Boolean search method, where we then challenge the world's academics and now legal service providers to basically do better, to come in and use their own homegrown search algorithms, whatever they are, to go against a data set and see if they can do a better job in finding relevant documents with less inaccuracy, less noise. And so for the last 3 years, we used the Master Settlement Agreement database, which is a tobacco database of OCR documents of about 7 million. And this year, we are, for the first time, using the public Enron data set. For the last 3 years of the project, we've had mostly academics, but for last year, we had a couple of legal service providers come in and participate in what's known as this interactive task, where we use an expert attorney as a feedback mechanism for them to ask questions of to tune their systems. But at the end of the day, we have hypothetical topics, we have databases. I get a core of volunteers from lawyers and law students and legal assistants to do relevancy assessments each year, and then findings are reported on how the methods, all the different computer runs and all the different methods did. And if you'd like, I can sort of hit the bottom line here.
Yeah.
What is paradoxical about the Trek Legal Track research to date is that on the one hand, it has only emerged in the third year where there are certain methods that on a one-to-one kind of basis beat the Boolean baseline. So it's very difficult, actually, to construct alternative search methods that do a lot better than a well-constructed Boolean string. On the other hand, the slides that I have been put together and in my public talks and writings on this, it appears that 78%, as much as 78% of relevant documents are left on the table if you only do Boolean strings. That is, on some, across all topics that we've run for 3 years, some topics, a Boolean string that the lawyers routinely do, they do very well. They get almost all the relevant documents in that topic. But some topics get near 0%, and on average, it's only about 22% of the relevant documents that have been found across all of the topics and all of the methods being run. So what that, to me, suggests that there's like dark matter in the universe. There's a lot of relevant documents that are just left behind, and we need to be thinking about a fusion approach, what Gartner has now called a cocktail approach of using search methods to really grab at getting a richer set of relevant documents and hopefully while trying to trim costs and be more efficient about the process. Now, this is only, I say this with some trepidation, only year four of the project. I thought when I got into it that it would be a one-year deal and I'd be in and out, and all of the scientists that I work with at NIST laughed at me. We are in year four. We have an open letter to the legal profession that was just signed on Sedona Conference Stationery, and it's up on the Trek Legal Track site. It will be on the Sedona Conference site, signed by Richard Brayman and Ken Withers, myself, and Ellen Voorhees, who runs the NIST Trek project generally. We're urging legal service providers in year four, given that we have the Enron data set to work with, to come in and work with us, be part of the research, participate in the ongoing program, and we will benefit, all lawyers will benefit from a broader participation in this project. Ultimately, the goal is to try to find ways to more efficiently search for electronic evidence and reduce costs.
You know what? It would seem to me that there's a big part driving the lack of people jumping in. It's fear. And, you know, I think you've pointed out it's a cocktail approach. It's a fear that maybe your technology won't look as good because you don't build the right process to go with the technology. And all of a sudden you get tagged with bad technology. You know, when it seems like it's just pretty darn hard to do this extremely well just with technology or just with people.
I agree completely that the entire process here is not just using tools, but using a process that works as part of these tasks. I will say this. This is not the Trek Legal Track is not U.S. News and World Report. There's not a ranking system. There's a prohibition on advertising or marketing. What someone who steps up as a legal service provider or into part of this project, what they're saying to the world is that they're willing to participate in a neutral evaluation, government-run project that is attempting to do something of value to the profession. And so I think I would think well of an organization that is willing to participate. So there won't be a kind of there shouldn't be that level of anxiety about participation. Having said that, we will be looking for additional organizations to come in this year. We have about a month before the starting gun will be sometime at the end after Memorial Day and right at the beginning of June, where we're really running this track for this year, and we'll go on. And it won't be the last year of the Trek track, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I think the research is so important for the profession, reducing costs by better searches, this kind of evaluation program should go on in whatever form, whether it's Trek or something else.
Oh, I agree. Why do you think information retrieval is so hard in general? Is it this cocktail, this need to sort of project manage different skill sets, or?
Well, I think there are a number of reasons. The primary reason is that the information retrieval is a very difficult domain to make a lot of progress in, and that's because of the ambiguity of language. Every keyword that you can mention has a variety of meanings, and there are many ways of describing any particular search. If you're, you know, there are just problems with language. At the National Archives, George Bush is a fundamentally ambiguous term. Are we talking about Bush 43 or Bush 41's presidency? But every term that you can come in has ambiguity and what's known as synonymy. If you want to search for ambassadors, you forget about searching for diplomats, consuls, officials, and other ways of describing it. So you need a really good, smart approach to keyword analysis. What lawyers don't do, we are not well trained in scientific terms or in thinking about best practices in terms of processes. That's why I'm so heartened to see that Sedona is coming out with a commentary that builds on the search commentary that we did a couple years ago that did touch on process. The new commentary is called Achieving Quality in the Discovery Process, and part of it is about project management and putting together a team led by an attorney that really is grappling with these issues on the front end to think through problems not only about search, but about the entire e-discovery lifecycle. In addition, that commentary that's going to be out imminently will be talking about metrics and sampling and other sort of analytics that I think are important and build on the search commentary that Sedona has done. So we're not very good at this stuff. I know I'm an English major and a political science major, and we're in some level faking it. But lawyers are, by and large, pretty smart people who, when they're tasked to understand a problem, really get into it. I certainly trial lawyers. My experience is when I've had to learn something about the nuclear regulatory industry, I learned it fast, and I could cross-examine people or cross-examining on statistics. Similarly, I think e-discovery lawyers, this is not so impossible. This is not quantum physics. The concepts of recall, precision, and the information retrieval terms that are set out in the Sedona commentary are the kind of things that I think lawyers should have a baseline knowledge of. And I would urge the people listening to this program to go to the Sedona commentary. It's free on the Sedona website. Take a look at the appendix of the different alternatives to search methods, and be up on the cases where judges like Judge Fasciola, Judge Peck recently in the Walter Gross opinion, and Judge Grimm are laying down a gauntlet to the profession. They're saying, look, we all need to think through these search issues in a more strategic way and a more sophisticated way, and be able to document our processes so that they're defensible. And at the end of the day, if we do that, if we step back and think about this from a holistic way, then we'll all be better off. One more thing, which is that Richard Brayman's Sedona Cooperation Proclamation that Sedona's come out with has a key plank in it about negotiating search protocols. That's what we've been doing in TREC for the last 3 years, and that is what is being urged by judges and by Sedona to have a more cooperative attitude going into meet and confers, so that you can think through the search process in a way that is more transparent than lawyers are used to in the past, and which I believe will lead to more fruitful results and, for the bottom line, save costs for clients.
Well, and when we talk about this topic, and I'm thrilled that we're able to dedicate a whole show on this, I think about all the conferences I've been to, and I tried to at the last, I put on a conference every 3 years with a couple of lawyers in Pittsburgh on best of legal technology. And people come in that are sort of novices or they're litigators that want to learn more about this. And they're looking at a room full of vendors, and they're listening to all these general cases. And there's very little education on how to actually attack this, the nuts and bolts. And even if you walk into a room of vendors, it'd be nice if you had like an EDRM model of what each device maybe does in order, instead of, when you go to a car dealership, it's a Hyundai or a Buick or a Cadillac, or you have branding and you've got a sense of different standards for different vehicles. But it's really hard walking in cold to a show.
This is the question that I've been that's animated me for a number of years, which is that there's no Consumer Reports red dot and black dot for buying products that will do the kind of job that we're talking about search and retrieval. And so TREC is a means toward that end. It's not a complete answer, but it is. I support lawyers asking questions, technical questions, and you have to be grounded enough to do that. But to ask hard questions if you're at a legal tech show and if you're engaged in a bake-off or some sort of demo with vendors coming in to look at their services to see exactly what it is that you will be getting, and what kind of sort of benchmarking or standards or objective analysis have they done of their own products and services. And so sometimes I'm not invited back by certain forums that I speak at because I'm challenging the hosts and the sponsors to do exactly that. And so, but I'm going to continue on my mission to try to urge that lawyers feel more comfortable with and are better educated on these kind of technical subjects. And I'm so heartened that the Sedona Conference has taken this up and has devoted some very time and resources and energy to putting out really good papers that are analytical in nature, that stress the analytics and that's going on. And so I'm also very excited about the future. I think there are solutions here that can actually reduce costs of e-discovery. That it's not it's not a Malthusian gloom and doom. That it's just that costs will only spiral and increase in this area. I think there are changes in technology that have the power of reducing overall costs across a discovery process, and that's really what I think clients want to hear, mm-hmm. and I think what motivates me to continue the research that I'm involved with.
Let's go briefly into one other area of the problem of finding information. It's the battle between recall and precision. And if you want to spend just a minute describing these sort of basic conflicting battles that you have pulling information.
Well, I think these are terms that I think lawyers should be generally familiar with. The Sedona Conference publication explains it at length. Recall is a measure of completeness. If you have 50 documents that are really relevant in a large data set and you only find 25 of them, you've got 50% recall. Precision is a measure of accuracy. If you have pulled out 100 hits and only 20 of them are relevant, and you've got 80 that are noise, then you only have a 20% level of precision. And recall and precision are sort of inversely aligned with each other. And what you really want to do is have high recall and high precision. You want to find all the relevant documents you can in a large collection, and you also want to have a minimum of noise. You don't want to go through and be inefficient about your processes. That's the problem I have with keyword searching. That isn't really well thought out or negotiated. If you just throw a bunch of keywords at a large data set, you're going to get a tremendous amount of noise, and you're not probably going to get all the relevant documents because, especially if you spell the keywords right. Anyone who's listening who has a keyword issue in their practice and wants to put whatever the term, for example, tobacco, in a large data set, if you don't purposely misspell the word tobacco and find out what the data set has in terms of OCR errors or anything else, you're missing potential relevant documents. So there are things I've learned along the way. I think there are lots of concepts that are out there in sort of the world of information retrieval that would be very useful to understand, and I think the Sedona commentary is of help here.
Okay. Trying to essentially, I'm trying to wrap this thing up here. If you were attacking this problem of trying to find the right information on a project, you've got your data set that you want to attack, any sort of final thoughts or thoughts you want to reinforce as tips for people?
Well, I think the lonely attorney who's listening to this and saying he or she is just been dumped on by some senior partner type and is all alone trying to dream up words, that's the wrong paradigm, the wrong model. You need to reach out and have an interdisciplinary team, people who understand the corporate data set, either your own or the other side's corporate culture. Figure out with IT people and with people who are knowledgeable in other disciplines how to attack the search problem. I think the days are over where it's just one attorney assigned to dream up a bag of words and then go after a very large data set. You're just going to miss. So the Sedona commentary on achieving quality is aimed at a sort of a better project management perspective of this. That will be coming out soon. I urge people to sort of think in new and creative ways about the problem of searching for evidence rather than just relying on techniques that they've sort of inherited from law school and knowing about Lexis and Westlaw.
Great. Well, you've mentioned the Sedona Conference as a place to go find additional information on this topic. Any other advice on where to look? Or
well, I would. I would be delighted to have both participants in the Trek Legal Trek as well as volunteers for the assessment phase. We need 100 people a year, and thanks to Ralph Losey and his marketing of the Trek project on his blog, which I so much appreciate, and others. We have, I think, on the order of 20 or 25 volunteers so far. So to go to the Trek Legal Trek homepage, all you have to do is type in your favorite browser, Trek, T-R-E-C, 2009, Legal Trek, and it will come up. And there'll be an overview paper and an open letter to the profession, and we will populate it with more documents as we're going on this year. So I would be delighted for people to take a look at that. The ABA Law Journal had an article about Trek. It's online in the April issue, an article by Jason Krauss on called In Search of the Perfect Search. Gartner has just done a small paper that that talks about the Trek legal track, and there is some attention being gained about the project, and I'm always happy to take calls or emails from people who want to know what we're doing and be part of the research effort, and I trust that you will have my email as part of this broadcast.
Yes, we will have that all up in the description, and that's basically it. Jason, thank you again for joining us on this the show on search and retrieval. Really appreciate it. You're someone that has inspired my career path direction, and hopefully you inspire many more people for the good work you've been doing.
Well, thanks very much, Carl.
Okay, and you've been listening to ESI Bytes. My name's Carl Shineman. I'm with Jurinov, and remember to come to ESI Bytes to learn about electronically stored information before electronic discovery bites you back. And if you want to hear more podcasts, a full library of shows are located at our website, www.esibytes.com. Thanks again. Take care, everyone.